It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, also joining us from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. All right, we've at least had a couple days to gather our thoughts.
That's one word, describe
coffee,
it, yes.
Yeah, that's one approach.
Fix our televisions and replace the remotes that we destroyed, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I guess, Coffey, I'm going to start with you first, only because you're the only one of us that kind of predicted this, even though you did back off at the last second because you almost had it exactly right as a plus 10-point loss. But just out of curiosity, what was it that made you believe that was going to happen?
Well, I had more, believe it or not, I had more faith in the offense than the defense. It was the defense that had me concerned based on the two games that preceded, the 10 quarters really that preceded it. And yet from watching the game, it seemed like for the most part, the defense kind of had it on lock from the beginning of the game. I mean, they were out there, they were performing. I mean, granted, there were a couple long runs, but it seemed like for the most part, they were keeping Stanford contained. And then all of a sudden turned the ball over twice, practically in the red zone, and you give up 14 points and there you have it. So I was mostly thinking that the offense could easily keep up with them and the defense was might have a problem. And it's weird that it really kind of turned out to be the opposite if you look at it from the wide angle lens.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right about that. I thought the defense played well enough to win. But offensively, I think there's some major concerns there in that a couple of things that just really jump out at you. And I went just at it for kicks. I went and looked at current stats of the top 15 teams. There's only one other quarterback in the top 15 who threw for less than 60%. Okay. And it's Rozier from Miami, which is no big surprise. The strange thing is, of the top 15 programs, literally like 80% of them are completing 65% or better from their starting quarterback.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think like Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune broke this down, but he kind of narrowed down the three or four statistics that are sort of a hallmark of all the teams that are, you know, that are in the playoffs the last several years or whatever, or top five, or I can't remember exactly what the parameters were. But, you know, you would think it'd be the usual, you know, defending the run well, you know, running the ball pretty well, et cetera. But passing efficiency was up there. And all the teams that have, you know, I think the lowest ranked team that had made the Final Four the last several years was like 27th in passing efficiency or something like that. So, and, you know, obviously completion percentage is a big part of the passing efficiency stat. So so I think that's kind of what you're getting at, right, Mike?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, I think that, you know, if you're going to say, okay, what was it? I don't think it's the only thing and the only reason we lost the game, but it sure is a big reason. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And so I think from that perspective, you have to say to yourself, okay, what do we do to fix this? What I found kind of interesting was, there was an article that I read, and I can't remember. I mean, I've been reading so many articles. But apparently Herb Street talked to Brian Kelly specifically about this and asked about Wimbush. And Brian Kelly's response was that in practice, he makes all the throws.
Well, we've been hearing that for quite a while. I mean,
yeah. And so, but two things jump out at me just in watching the game and then going back and watching a little bit of it here and there. His inability to throw a tight spiral on a majority of his passes is a real problem. And there was two indications of it that had me like jumping out of my seat. Whenever he throws that quick screen to the wide receiver, he almost 50% of the time can't throw.
He short hops it there.
It short hops it, or it's a duck, it's just a wobbler. It's like a duck. The second one was Stepherson made a kind of late in the second half. It might have been a fourth down play. Kind of ran a quick slant. And, you know, it arguably was somewhat of a catchable ball. I mean, it was low.
I remember which one you're talking about.
A little bit below his knee. The problem was the ball is not a tight spiral. So it's like coming. He's got to almost guess, like, to get his hands on it. If it's a tight spiral, you can go down and get that because you know exactly where the nose of the football is. And you can cup your hands in a way that gives you a chance to reel that in, right? But these guys are almost guessing at what they're looking at. And, I mean, I think it's just a major problem. And it obviously contributed to what happened.
Well, it's the physical and the mental. I mean, he's obviously messed up in the head right now. But I didn't realize, you know, I went back and, like, slowed things down and stuff. And, I mean, he's really regressed in terms of making reads and, you know, progressions. I mean, on that first interception, you know, I mean, it was... He had Tony Jones just like completely by himself in the right flat. Like he's got to know his checks. And I mean, that was just so bad. And then, you know, a couple other plays too, like on the one that I think he overthrew, or maybe it would have been a good catch by Durham Smythe, pretty much in the end zone. So it was probably a pretty decently thrown ball, but Smythe couldn't hang on to it, or there was some, you know, got into it.
No. It was nowhere near.
Well, wasn't there another one that Smythe had his hands on and didn't come down with? It was probably a pretty decent defensive play. But my point is that there was a guy mid-range by himself, like at the 15-yard line, just standing there. In other words, he threw into the cover two or the deep cover, and the guy underneath was just completely standing by himself. I mean, I don't know. It's just really frustrating because if you're having physical issues throwing the ball, right? If you're having fundamental issues kind of throwing the ball well, one of the ways that you can still complete over 50% of your passes is throwing to the guy that's wide open. You know,
AKA Tommy Reese.
Yeah, right? and so when you're combining you know, sort of poor mechanics or poorly thrown balls with throwing to the wrong guy, then your recipe for disaster. That's how you end up 11 for 28, and that's how you end up with a couple interceptions, and that's how you end up, you know, losing two of your last three games. And not to put it all on Wimbush, I mean, I hear what Mike Coffey was saying about the defense, but the fact of the matter is that the defense did play pretty well, but the defense did two things that it didn't do all year, or at least in the games that it's played well, and that is Stanford scored after every time we scored. In other words, the defense did not sort of hold serve or, you know, kind of get the ball, force a punt. Every time that we scored, Stanford took the ball right down the field and got points as well. And the defense wasn't particularly good in the red zone. I mean, I know we gave up, it wasn't good at all in the red zone. I mean, I know we gave up, you know, a short field, but it just seemed like, you know, the back end of the defense continues to struggle. And unless we sort of upgrade and get better at the safety position, we really had one playmaker back there all year. You know, Julian Love had to play corner. Safeties were, you know, kind of a liability both on run support and, you know, 50-50 balls in the air. So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of blame to go around Saturday night. For the life of me, I just, you know, Dexter Williams, three carries, 21 yards. I mean, To me, it was so glaringly obvious that Josh Adams has not been himself. I don't care what Brian Kelly says. I don't know how to be. I don't know whether to be more upset if he won't tell us that Josh Adams was hurt or that he's lying to us. I don't know what to be more upset about. If he's lying to us and telling us he's 100%, or that he is actually, or he's saying he's 100% and continues to play him when his performance is so, you know, has dropped off. I mean.
Right. Well, Coffee, I mean, at least he should give us an explanation, at least on Dexter Williams. Like, at least tell us that, hey, guys, I can only run him three times.
I mean, Dexter even turned. No, Dexter even got three or four positive yards on that ridiculous sort of that hesitation pitch play or whatever the hell that was. Remember that play where, you know.
Yeah, but is that Dexter Williams not?
No, what I'm saying is that that was just a screwed up. That was a screwed up play, which would have been a minus two if Adams would have been the recipient of that pitch. But it was a plus four or plus three and a half. Or I mean, in other words, I just saw more burst and more. I just couldn't understand why Josh Adams had 20 carries on Saturday night and Dexter Williams had three. Just to the naked eye, it just seemed that one was so much more, had so much more to offer in terms of hitting holes and you know, getting extra yards. And I mean, you know, Josh Adams was tackled behind the line of scrimmage at least a dozen times in the last month of the season, right?
Yeah, and I the thing that jumped out at me for Williams, I was looking back at the play-by-play. I was thinking of the drive right before we hit the punt that Stanford got caught at the one. They had this one play, they just ran a simple off-tackle play with Williams, and he just blew through there for 14 yards and just seemingly nobody touching him until,
in a tight
yeah, window. And he just, I mean, he got like through there so fast. He was at the second level and he was making guys miss, and I'm thinking, wow, this is great. And then we didn't see him again. And what?
But that's what really pissed me off. He had such a nice gain, and then they threw the deep ball to St. Brown, where he got called for offensive pass interference.
Yeah, that was the very next play.
Right, the very next play. And it made
it
no
so
sense to me. Yeah, it made no sense to me. And I'm not a big...
Especially when you consider that was the first pass of that drive. They had gone from their own 25
right.
to almost to the Stanford 40 on the ground. And all of a sudden, and plus, you know, as long as we're bringing up this play, can I also say, at the risk of sounding like sour grapes, but the officiating Saturday was absolutely atrocious. I thought that
pass interference in the end zone was a joke.
Yeah, that was absolutely ridiculous. And to be honest, and as a flip side thing, I think that one first down that Notre Dame was got awarded, it might have even been the play before Williams' run, when obviously we were like at least a half a yard short, and I was even surprised that they reviewed the play and still gave it to him.
Yeah,
so I'm not
was,
really sure.
Yeah, it was crazy
what was going on there, but.
Yeah.
To watch that drive and see him eating up yards on the ground, and for the first time, the Stanford defense is starting to look tired and worn down. And then as we're right back to the
first and 25.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're throwing the ball again, and now all of a sudden we have to punt. Now, granted, they downed it at the one. That's fine, but it's so frustrating watching those plays develop and watch us really move the ball, and then all of a sudden first down. Now maybe he figures, well, we've run so much, the safeties are cheating up, we can get past them. But you got to remember this, as we've been talking about this whole time, this is not an accurate passer. This is not a guy for whom passing is a strength. And this is a game you really, really got to win if you really want to get the fans excited about this reboot and whatever. And instead, we start throwing the ball around again, and we lose the ball game.
Yeah, and I think to the point of the frustrations with Wimbush, on that interception that he threw in the end zone, I watched that like probably 10 times today. And in the first replay of it on ESPN, they show the top view of the play. So you kind of see like, okay, here's what happened on the play,
right,
on the normal television view. What they then do is they show the play again, only from behind Wimbush. So you got a sense for what he saw. But what you also see is he's locked in from the second the receiver leaves the line of scrimmage. Now, he pump faked it to him, but even still, you just can't, when you got a safety playing over the top. And I think after watching that play so many times, what threw Wimbush off was that the safety actually started out on the far hash. So as he's receiving the hike, the safety is to his left, which is like, you know, three quarters of a way of the field away from St. Brown. But the problem is the safety, as soon as he saw Wimbush turn his shoulders, he starts going that way. Like, okay, you're obviously going this way. He pumps fakes, and then he breaks into a dead sprint, and the ball is so poorly underthrown. And here's the thing. Brown was five steps ahead of the guy. That's a ball that you don't even need to air out. You can just zip it because he's five steps in front of him. There's no way he blocks that. And he kind of just floats it in there.
Oh,
and,
I think the reason, you know, we're so discouraged is, you know, you look at a guy on the other side of the field that, you know, is basically in his fourth or fifth game, and he's making all the throws. And he's also doing the things that, you know, Stanford is always, I mean, it's like watching, you know, it's like deja vu all over again. You know, they got these big, tall receivers, but their quarterback knows where to throw it. He throws it in a place where either his guy's going to get it or it's going to be too high, right?
Yeah. The fact is,
and Wimbush, you know, is kind of all over the place. He like underthrows our tallest receivers. He overthrows our shorter receivers. you know, he short hops the, you know, the flare outs or the, you know, the down and outs and the wide receiver screens. And, you know, And so I don't know if that's mechanics. I mean, listen, you know, I can't, you can't give up on the guy. I mean, he obviously has a world of physical ability and talent.
No, absolutely.
By all accounts, he can throw the ball. He came to Notre Dame as a guy who could throw the ball accurately and with zip. And so so he's a big question mark for the offense. Obviously, a couple stalwarts have to be replaced on the offensive line. But besides that, you know, you might have, you know, 5-6 running backs, all with talent coming back. You're going to have Stepherson, probably St. Brown, Claypool, Boykin and, Michael Young. And, you know, I mean, you've got receiver depth. You've got a defensive line that has as much depth as I think we've had under Brian Kelly with, you know, the two guys, the two freshmen that played, and Hayes, and who knows, maybe Daniel Cage is going to come back, you know, and then, of course, Tillery and, Bonner says he isn't, but you never know about that, I guess. So let's say he isn't. And then who else? The two freshmen, and then I know I'm missing somebody. Obviously, Dalen Hayes and Aquara on it, you know, as rush end. So linebacker is a little soft. And then, you know, you don't have guys who can make a play on the ball like the kid for Stanford did on that interception. So you need to find a safety somewhere that steps up. Special teams was just a bummer. You know, I'd much rather have sort of solid special teams that are consistent. Yeah, they had a couple good plays. We had our first real good punt return, and we had a punt down inside of the
I'm
five.
Glad you
but
brought this
it's
up.
So inconsistent.
And, yeah.
And mostly poor.
I'm really glad you brought this up because I took a lot of time to look into this. So here's what I found. And I think it's a little misleading what ESPN does. What ESPN does is they rank teams based on total yardage attained. And I think that's kind of misleading because I think the more accurate statistical or the more accurate statistic you want to look at is what is your average gain on punt return or kick return. So if you look at the way ESPN did it on kickoffs, Notre Dame is like, I think, 47th. Or I take that back. They're 63rd. So on kick returns, we're the 63rd best team based on ESPN's projections or the way that they do it. But if you do it based on average yards per gain per return, we're 85th, okay? On punt returns, again, they do it by total yardage gained. So I still think that's misleading. But Notre Dame is 47th, okay? But if you do it by where do they rank in terms of average yards per return, they're 83rd. And here's the interesting thing. Of the top 15 teams, everybody's in front of us, except for Ohio State and Oklahoma, surprisingly. But of the teams that are in front of us, like 8 of them have a touchdown scored on either a kick or a punt return. And we've got zeros there. And it's almost like our mantra is, let's just not fumble the football. Let's put somebody back there who's sure-handed. Yeah, we're not going to get much yardage.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I look at special teams maybe a little bit more conservatively than most. And I really focus more on the coverage than the return game. And also, you know, I look at number one, field goal accuracy. Number two, net punting. At number three, coverage, and then after that, returns, just in terms of order of importance. And that's probably wrong, but I don't know. I just kind of look at it as more of a do no harm as opposed to a, you know, sort of a revenue-producing or point-producing venture. And, you know, Tyler Newsome had a very, very average to below average year. You know, a couple highlights, but, you know, I mean, that kid from Stanford was a punter. you know, Tyler Newsome was in a lot of big spots too, came up with 34 yarders. So, you know, he wasn't very good. This kid looks like he has some ability who kicks off. Looks like he was able to sort of hook him into the deep left corner of the end zone, you know, a couple times, and he looks like he has potential. But when we have a kickoff return, the other team's pretty much starting between the 25 and the 30 every time. If you notice, C.J. Sanders was, you know, when the couple returns that he made, he was cut down at the 15. And it just looks like every team that we play just looks like it gets down the field faster on kick coverage. You know, I don't know if that's Sanders. I don't know if that's blocking. It's probably a combination of both. You know, CJ Sanders didn't really. You know, it's kind of funny, but I just kind of had a bad feeling about the game. And then when Fink had his long return, I was just praying that he took it all the way to the house, because I just had this feeling that something was going to get mucked up if we had to run the offense out there to score. And sure enough, we went backwards with two penalties.
I think the three of us have been talking a lot over these games about, you know, the deficiencies that we're seeing, and I know some other people who are watching the games are seeing them also. And Ed, you talked about the guys who are coming back who think it can make a difference, and I agree. I think I think this team can definitely be more successful next year. But to be honest, I think there's three guys who I don't want to see coming back. Number one, well, you know, we've been talking about Brandon Wimbush, his mechanics, his footwork, the issues, throwing to the wrong guy. He needs a quarterback coach. We can't have, I mean, with every ounce of respect to Tommy Rees, he's 25 years old. He's never coached anywhere besides Notre Dame. If Brandon Wimbush is going to improve as a quarterback, we need an honest-to-God quarterback coach coaching him and teaching him these things. I mean, Tommy Rees may know these things, but I would imagine it's pretty hard as a 20, 21-year-old guy to have this 25-year-old guy who was just there before you telling you what to do. That might be a difficult ask. The second thing, and we just spent the last 5 minutes talking about special teams. This is Brian Polian's second stop at Notre Dame coaching special teams, and the special teams have been subpar both times. And Brian Kelly has never really had a true special teams coach, and we need one because it's a third of the game. Now it's not truly a third of the game time, but it's a weapon that, Mike, as you pointed out, the teams ahead of us are using those weapons. They're making use of their kickers and punters to win field position games. They're making use of their returners to score points and set up good field position. Notre Dame has to do that. Special teams cannot be an afterthought from a guy who is one of Brian Kelly's buddies. And frankly, the third guy I don't want to see coming back is Dell Alexander, because, and I've mentioned this on previous shows, no one in the wide receiver core impressed me this year. I mean, Stepherson made some good plays. Claypool made some good plays. St. Brown was here. He was there. But no one consistently stepped up. And, yeah, part of it is having Wimbush get the ball to him. But it's not like we were looking at all these performances saying, wow, look how well the wideouts are playing. And once again, the tight ends were virtually invisible for the second year in a row. I want to make sure that we're getting all this talent in and people are trying to get focused on getting this thing restarted. Fine, make sure that the coaching they're getting gives them the best possible chance to do that. So I would very much like to see Brian Kelly replace those three positions with people with a lot more experience.
Yeah, I don't think Polian's going anywhere. He's just too valuable as a West Coast recruiter.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
But I think those are three areas of concern that you mentioned. I mean, they're clearly probably the top three areas of concern, other than the safety position, because, Ed, I think you're dead right on that. It's a real problem not to have a strength there. I think you got to put Julian Love there if that's all you got, because he clearly is a playmaker. And safeties can make a huge difference as playmakers. And we just
I think a lot that's going to depend on, you know, what they get out of Pride, you know, Watkins if he comes back, and Vaughn, and Crawford, you know, what they can, if they think that those four guys can, you know, play boundary, you know, play whatever the corner positions are, nickel, you know, I think, you know, that's that. But I mean, Love is, he's just, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, maybe they'll luck out and, you know, everybody's talking about this Derek Allen now, this freshman that's coming in to play safety. Well, you know, whatever, 6 months ago, everybody was talking about, you know, Darnell Yule coming in and starting at defensive tackle. He turned out to be the third or fourth best freshman on the defensive line and never saw the field. So, you know, I don't know. But they've got to get better at the back end of the defense if they're going to, you know, sort of get to double-digit wins next year again. Not again, you know, if they're going to get to double-digit wins.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much an absolute must next year. I'm not sure that 8-4 or 9-3 is going to cut it. But, you know, I guess we'll have to see how that goes. I mean, it just seems like the schedule is not the brutal task
this year.
It's still tough. I'm not saying it's not tough, but I mean, at least we got
I only see three sort of surefire wins on the schedule next year, like Ball State, Vanderbilt, and I think you should beat Wake, even though it's out there. You know, but you've got...
you got Syracuse, too.
You've got... Yeah, that's true. I think you could probably put Syracuse in that category because that's at home. You know, Wake probably maybe isn't in that category. Maybe it's Syracuse instead. Although Syracuse beat Clemson this year, so who the hell knows. But, well, I mean, you know...
That one is at home, though. So.
That's right. That's right. So I'd probably give a nod to Syracuse as being more of a sure thing than the trip to Wake. But, you know, obviously Michigan and, you know, freaking Florida State and Stanford and USC and, I mean, whew. You know, Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, whatever. You know, we have no idea. But they're going to have their hands full. But, you know, we said this on the last podcast, and I was completely wrong because I thought that Wimbush had kind of righted himself in the second half against Navy. But it's, you know, whether it's Brian Kelly or Chip Long or really just about, you know, most programs in the country, maybe except Stanford. You know, the quarterback is the key, and I don't think he's going to throw the competition wide open in the spring. But he's going to have to. They're going to have to see some real progress because boy, did it regress in November.
Yeah, no doubt, it was just, you know, it's kind of difficult trying to scope out, you know, where you go from here. I mean, the season was going along so well, and then November hit, and things just crashed. So it's kind of hard. I mean, I think, and it's not just that they lost; it's the way they lost. I think if it had been like a last play loss to Miami, and then some kind of a fluke thing to Stanford, you'd say, okay, hey, these things happen. This is part of what goes on. This year was obviously that people were more fired up. They played better. This is great. But just the last three games, and even the last half of the Wake Forest game, you look at, and it's just kind of yikes. Just really, really tough.
Yeah, I'll tell you where I kind of really lost it was when it was 38-20, they score, we get the ball back, and then we start out by handing it to Adams two times in a row. I almost put my remote through the TV. And I don't know, and the reason I did wasn't because I'm disagreeing with the play calling, which I was, but I just couldn't, it was almost like we just gave up. And I just, that's one thing I just can't stand. And I think it's unfair to say that because, of course, these guys are competitors. They don't just give up. But it just made no sense to me that you're going to call two running plays. It's 38-20. I don't care if, you know, the game's, you know, probably out of reach. But it's a teaching moment, you know. We're going to... You got to get Brandon out there and just doing what he can do and control.
Yeah, there was just a lot more. There was just a lot more sloppiness the last three games in terms of, you know, they didn't run. It didn't seem like they ran tempo with the same sort of sense of urgency and crispness. And, you know, the execution was just. And to me, I have to say, I think a lot of that goes back to, you know, whether it was the line or Adams or a combination of both, or maybe teams were just sitting there waiting in the box. But I don't know. I just saw so much more spark from Williams and Jones just in the way they moved and their sort of their leg drive, and it just really befuddles me how the carries were apportioned over the last especially this past Saturday. I just it just didn't seem from the get-go. You know, Josh Adams, his lateral movement was, you know, was worse. He wasn't getting the tough yards as much. He was going down easier. He was, you know, you remember that play, maybe I think it was against Navy, you know, where he didn't make it to the first down marker, you know, just kind of got a hit on the side. I mean, that, you know, in October that would have been, you know, an easy first down. So whatever, I don't want to belabor the point, but it just didn't make sense. And you know, you kind of makes you, and I have to say that when they panned and they showed Brian Kelly on the sidelines a couple times, he just kind of had that stubborn son of a gun look on his face. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, they just, I understand that you've got a running back who has been a stud for the whole year, but, you know, supposedly part of this, you know, new leaf that was being turned over with it, that it was a total meritocracy, right? That it didn't matter if you were freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, didn't matter if you had, what you had done in the past, that everything was based on winning the football game, and that, you know, that no, there were no sacred cows, no sacred players, that, you know, if somebody, you know, was going to give us a better chance to win, it didn't matter what the performance was up to that point. And I just kind of felt like that, you know, they, you know, I don't want to say it was like the 33 trucking thing, but it just kind of was like, you know, we're just going to stick with this guy no matter what. And, you know, he's a warrior, sure, but he just was not right. And I think, you know, we didn't even see Deion McIntosh the last, you know,
half of the season.
Yeah, the last 3 weeks of the season, the last three games of the season. And not that, you know, and again, he got his carries because of, you know, bumps and bruises that Adams had. But, I mean, you know, he showed something.
I think
so,
it's weird.
I don't know.
Just from the standpoint that I literally can't remember, I swear, I don't know that I've ever heard a coach say, well, the reason he didn't play is because he just wasn't right, and he had a tough week. I mean, what do you mean he wasn't right? Was his leg broken? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. What do you mean he wasn't right? And the excuse he gave just didn't.
Well, no, he
add
said.
Up.
Well, he said Adams was 100%. He didn't.
No. I'm talking about when he kept him out of the weight
right.
game in the press conference, or it was even 2 days later. He's like, nah, he just had a rough week, and personally, he wasn't there. It just wasn't right. Like, what do you mean he wasn't right? Since when does a running back sit out of a game because he's not right? I mean, I've never heard that before.
I'm obviously having a really bad influence on you, too, because this is just... Oh, and by the way, the alumni band that came out for the game Saturday sounded fantastic. Loved every bit of them.
No, the first eight or nine games of the season, that like running back by committee, whether it's because of injury or just because of spelling people or whatever, is a concept that seems fine, and then suddenly it's not. I mean, and again, maybe Dexter was too hurt to play against Wake and that kind of stuff, but I don't know. I just really wonder. I'll always wonder like what the outcome of the game Saturday would have been if Josh Adams just couldn't go and they just had to go with Jones and Williams. And I just have this feeling that there might have been a different outcome.
I think I would have to agree with you 100%.
Well, you know, and as much as we've talked about how the last part of the season has been bad, I think there's still an opportunity. I mean, obviously not an opportunity to play in the playoffs or anything like that, but there's going to be a bowl game. The bowl game is going to be against some kind of a quality team. I mean, a lot of the ACC bowl matchups, I mean, there aren't a lot of tomato cans in there. So they're not going to the Cotton Bowl, they're not going to the Orange Bowl, but I think there's a good chance they may end up in the Citrus Bowl and they'd be playing a quality team from the SEC, or if they go to the, I can't remember the
Camping
name of the other
World,
bowl
yeah.
in Orlando. Yeah, that you get someone from the Big 12, I believe. If they can go out and put together, they've got 4 weeks or whatever to rest, heal up, learn, relearn what was learned or whatever. Go out there, put together a solid game plan, get a solid win out there. That might be good enough to jumpstart a little bit. Couple that with a good recruiting class, then all right, we go into the next year and we see if what started has gone, will continue. If they go out in the bowl game and they crap the bed, that's not going to be good, and I don't want to see that.
Yeah. Well, like my buddy said, you know, Wimbush looked like, you know, Tony Rice in 87, which of course is a nice harbinger of things to come. I was like, sure. Well, okay, maybe, or maybe he looked like Carlisle Holiday in 2003.
That's the other possibility.
So, pick your, you know, I hope it's the former and not the latter.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just from what you hear from everybody, he's
a talented kid.
So
yeah.
I get the feeling they will figure this out. I think he's going to have to watch a heck of a lot of film.
Well, the hard thing is to, for, you know, developing quarterbacks is they just get so few, you know, you really have to learn on the fly by experience. I mean, you just can't simulate, you know, playing in Hard Rock Stadium, you know, against them. You just can't simulate, you know, playing Stanford. You know what I mean? Like it's really, you know, if you're struggling as a quarterback, you know, whatever, practice and drills and fundamentals, all that is good. Yeah. But,
right?
You know, kind of making reads on the fly and all that kind of stuff. It's, you know,
I think it's just one of those things that it's like the light switch goes off once you start to figure it out, and then all of a sudden the game slows down, and it's pretty obvious he's not there yet. I think once he gets there, he's going to be dangerous, but he's just clearly not there yet from a confidence standpoint. And I think, you know, that's where all the focus is going to be. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if it's Tommy Rees and he's capable of it, or Coffey, if you're right, and they got to do a reboot there.
You know, it's amazing too. You know, when you look at the raw stats, I mean, you know, whatever, like you know, he had like 30 touchdowns and six turnovers or something like that. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, six interceptions or so. You know, in other words, they're not like, you know, I mean, how many guys do that and complete less than 50% of their passes, or, you know, or complete 50% of their passes in only three games? Right, so exactly. It's a real,
I think it's a testament to his skills. All right, well, let's hope that better things are yet to come, like Coffee says, and we do pull out a win in the bowl game, because I do think it would turn things around and hit it. You know, at that point, 10-3 with a bowl win, you got to be pretty damn happy from where we were starting at the beginning of the season. It's just frustrating to have some of these losses go.
Yeah, it's like 9-3. None of us would be bitching if the losses were to, you know, Georgia, Michigan State, and USC. I mean, we'd be, you know, in other words, like how you finish is so important in college football.
All right, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dumb and Dumber, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.